Okay, welcome back. That was an interesting first hour. Hope you liked that. We'll talk to them again. There is another great wave running through the COVID-19 community, the vax conscientious amongst us, and it has to do with the latest Ebola vaccine now being administered to healthcare workers in the Denver area. This has been going on for, I guess, several months now. We're going to cover that a little bit in this hour, and other things to do with the danger of being reinfected. In other words, multiple infections of the COVID-19 virus. Remember, that is a bioweapon. Also, don't forget that. It's not a real, normal, run-of-the-mill anything. It is completely a construct of abject evil. It is a bad virus. It does not go away, even though you seem to feel better. And I talked last time about a young man I talked to who said he'd had it twice. One was real bad, and he's never been the same, he said. And he's not injected. So you don't want to get this virus. Please, don't. So what we've got is, I guess, in the totality of overlooking the entire situation and trying to wrap the panorama around your mind, we have an awful lot of people who are very sick right now. Very, very much in pain, agony, suffering, mental and emotional duress, distress. They have been damaged physically and psychologically. This is a horrible thing that's going on. If you're going to kill a lot of people, they couldn't have picked a more dastardly, satanic, masochistic way of doing it. Not in the sense that you're exhibiting masochism and putting it on other people, but you've talked them into destroying themselves. It's horrible. Anyway, are you there, partner?
I'm here, Jeff. Made it
okay.
Through another week.
We did. We did. And that's beginning to mean more and more all the time. These are not easy weeks to get through. The world is obviously being pushed and engineered into a catastrophe. It already is in the catastrophe, but wait till it becomes fully manifested in the controlled mainstream media and the public becomes really afraid. They're beginning to catch on now, but the truth has not yet been revealed to them. Now, you sent me something about a young mother, and it's a little bit of a text from the young mother, and then there are three pictures. The top one is her and her little girl when she's healthy, and a beautiful little portrait of a young mother and her daughter. And then two pictures below that show the same mom now, and you can't really recognize her. She's been through horrors, physiologically, psychologically. She's barely alive. You want to read what she wrote at the top? Do you have that handy?
Yeah, I have it. Yeah.
Please read it. It's these words. Now, I want to, again, quickly reiterate, these are the feelings of a lot of people out there who have been destroyed by the injection and or the virus and or by shedding. Go ahead.
She says, I can't do this anymore. My brain is age 80. The pressure. No sleep. Feel drunk and concussed all the time. I cannot walk. I cannot feel my limbs. My hair is still coming out in clumps. I have rashes, dark urine, organ pain. I have no imagery in my brain anymore. No thought process. No inner monologue. They say they can do nothing for me. So psych drugs and more psych drugs and therapy and nursing homes where I will die.
Those words are emblematic of the evil, the horror that this bioweapon tandem of virus and vax, so-called, are administering to innocent, kind, good people. Now, there are some people out there who are not innocent and kind, but they're still being afflicted. And there's nothing like a catastrophic injury to virtually your entire life to maybe wake you up about how your life has been misspent. And I'm not being preachy here, but There are all kinds of people who are being taken down and taken out. This is a genocide in progress. Make no mistake about it. And I hope I'm including everyone out there when I say that I think no man or woman of goodwill would wish this on any good person. This is horrible. What Erica
someone,
just read, horrible.
Just for the record, the topic of, well, how many did you get and which ones did you get? The answer is one. I got one Pfizer.
That's it, huh?
Yeah,
well,
and they said, and she said, I'm 2.5 years in. It is a nightmare. I am progressively worsening. I have a home nurse, a home aide, and I am bedridden. It is just awful. And this evoked, not surprisingly, quite a bit of comment and sympathy from others in the group. And, you know, there's a lot of people that are in the same boat, and, you know, they're just not really talking anymore. They've kind of resigned themselves to living with these afflictions.
Right. They've shut up and they've shut down in many cases.
Yeah.
They just withdraw. Understandable.
And, God, there's this one woman here. Where did it go? I'm so sorry you're going through this. My 16-year-old daughter also is 2.5 years in and no better. We have tried everything, and I worry about her every day.
See that? Okay. Let me take that little expression, statement. I worry about her every day. That mother, I assume that was written by a mom, is grief-stricken 25 hours a day over her little girl, this beautiful little girl that she raised, gave birth to, who is now suffering so terribly. This, as I say, these bioweapons were created by inhumane people who are not,
yeah.
I can't quantify in words how evil they are. I can't. This, again, targets for destruction your heart, your brain, your blood, your immune system, all your major organs, and your neurology. You are targeted for total destruction. And it's coming home to roost. And we talked last time or the time before about long haulers, COVID long haulers, and how many of those people are now, they're gone.
Yeah.
Or they're close to it.
Yeah, they are in some cases degenerating neurologically. And whatever doctors they've consulted don't really have any answers for them.
No. $200,000 worth of tests, drugs, sessions, office visits, hospital visits, ER visits, horror. And they're no better off.
No.
A million supplements, no better off. I'm being facetious. A million, but whatever. They're taking all kinds of things to try to get better, and it's not responding. This is a horrific creation.
Here's another comment
history.
Here. You know, the pain is really just unimaginable in some cases. Another woman says, I am so sorry. How you describe it is exactly how I feel. The neurologist says headaches, and I'm like, it's not that. It's like someone has constantly bashed my head in with a bat. I'm 1.5 years in and feels like I'm losing my brain. What did your PET scan show? I've been trying to get one, but they won't order it. I think it's neurosarcoidosis.
Well, again, how do you measure pain and agony and grief? You live with it or you don't. And I think more than a few people have certainly checked out by this time. They just have had it. You don't hear about those.
I mean,
those,
you know, these are the protein, the spike protein itself is neurotoxic. So if it gets into the brain, it's going to do damage. You're going to have inflammation. And
well, look what we talked about last program. People literally going out the front door to walk down the block and they get lost. They can't remember how to get home. Come on.
Right.
They're driving home from a store. They can't find their house.
Yep.
All right.
And, for better or for worse, this latest Omicron variant, which appears to have originated in a lab, not sporadically or spontaneously, is more neurotropic than the previous ones.
Yes.
It's less severe in terms of, cytokine storm or anything like that. It manages to slip past that part of the immune system and end up in the central nervous system rather easily, I would say, compared to the other ones. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what's somewhat deceptive about it. People report having had Omicron, and then they think they're fine, and, I don't know, a month later, they're starting to manifest neurological symptoms.
I know. It's unspeakably
evil. It's deceptive
evil.
That way, because people are used to thinking that the severity of the illness is having to do with the symptoms that are generated from the innate immune system that, go on
fever,
high alert.
Fever, cough, sneezes.
Yeah. Yeah,
fevers especially. That's your get that thermometer. It's crazy. All right, let's move on.
Neurological, viruses are very stealthy. When you have rabies, you don't know you have rabies until it's in your brain.
Right. Well, this again is think of your entire central nervous system as an extension of your brain, and the attack on the body. Brain, central nervous system, that's your neurology. And this has been designed and built to destroy that. These people are not your friends. Big Pharma, the Pentagram, remember, they funded all this. We funded all. We paid for our own destruction. And Donald Trump and his warp speed, and how dare that man claim, I've saved 100 million American lives. No, Donald, let's reverse it. You're probably going to end up killing 100 million Americans minimum with your warp speed rolling these death shots out. He will not back down from that. Why? Because he can't. He's not stupid. He's owned.
Right.
They financially own him. They, the bankers, they own him. They refinanced all of his debts. I think it was almost $1 billion or something to keep his empire alive. So, no. And Steve Bannon today said, Donald Trump's first 100 days in office coming up are going to set the agenda for the next 50 years. Well, if they're anything like his first 100 days, the first time he was in office, we're going to go backwards even further. We're not going ahead. He lied.
Yeah,
all he did was
lie. You know, two different ways. Is that for better or for worse?
It's true.
50 years meaning what?
It's true. Total servitude and slavery, or worse, or extinction.
Where it's going.
I don't know. I'm sorry. I don't know Donald Trump personally, but I watch, I listen, and I don't trust anybody in major national politics. Anybody. They wouldn't be there if they were truly representing we the people. Sorry.
That's the name of the game.
Ebola. They're giving out Ebola vax now. They've talked about Ebola many times. Ebola will be, was it Gates? Ebola is going to be the next pandemic. Who said that? Somebody said that. Anyway, so what do they know? They know what's coming. How do they know it? Because they're planning it. And they're rolling out this so-called Ebola vaccine now. It's not an Ebola based vaccine at all. It's a VSV virus. It's a live virus vaccine, and it has one protein from one of the six strains of Ebola on it, theoretically to teach your immune system how to get ready and to attack and destroy Ebola when it comes. One protein from one of six strains of Ebola on a VSV viral platform. That's what they're giving out to people. This is not anything like, it's being misrepresented as always. Okay.
Yeah. I don't know whether that's intentional or not, but there's misinformation out there right now that people are being injected with a live Ebola virus vaccine. And that is not the case.
No.
We covered this back on December 4th, and we explained how the vaccine works. Now, I think we should be alarmed that they're shoring up the supply of Ebola vaccines. Why would they be doing that? But I think we can predict, because they've already declared Ebola a national emergency? So they've got PREP Act prepared to go,
it's already declared. Paperwork's done. Yeah.
Yeah. And there are other Ebola vaccines in the pipeline. But this one, manufactured by Merck, has been approved as of 2019. And it's a recombinant vaccine using VSV, vesicular stomatitis virus, which is a virus that typically infects cattle, horses, pigs, and insects. There is a vector for that virus. It's a sand fly.
Insects, too. That's interesting.
Insects,
okay.
Yeah. Now, the insects aren't infected themselves, but they can transmit this
virus.
Sure. And usually it's a nuisance virus. It doesn't really cause a lot of disease, at least in humans. I mean, it can be problematic in livestock. But they've chosen this to be the carrier for the gene, the surface protein gene of the Zaire Ebola virus. So you would be injected with live virus, and it would cause a productive infection. This is replication competent. It's not like the adenovirus, which was supposed to be replication incompetent. This one will actually cause a productive infection, where it generates copies of itself with this Ebola protein, and presumably you would mount a response, generate antibodies against this protein that would protect you in case of a future Ebola exposure. The thing is, this particular VSV, vesicular stomatitis virus, does shed. So if you are in close contact with somebody who's received this vaccine and they haven't neutralized the artificial infection, well, you too can be exposed to this and
get it.
Yeah, and get it. Now, what's alarming is they determined the safety of this thing within 6 months of deploying it. And they claim to have trialed it on 15,000 people, mostly in Africa, but I just realized today that it was also in other countries as well, including the U.S. And so they've determined within 6 months of observing people having had the vaccine that it's safe. How efficacious is it? Well, again, we're relying on them, their own self-reporting, that it was effective in protecting people against an Ebola outbreak in whatever countries in Africa were having them at the time. I think there's a lot of unknowns and a lot of assumptions being made about it. And
as usual.
The fact that it's a recombinant virus that ought to concern you. We don't know what properties does this Ebola glycoprotein have? We've realized now that the same sort of protein on the SARS coronavirus, the spike protein, has devastating effects. So
catastrophic effects.
Yeah.
And this is, so just keep in mind when you hear them talking, we're going to play a little clip here. You hear them talking about, we're giving an Ebola vaccine out now. No, that's not what they're doing. They're using the VSV as a transport platform for one glycoprotein from one of the six variants of the Ebola virus. That's it. That's what they're doing.
The other concern is, because it's only addressing one of the six known strains of Ebola, are you likely to have antibody-dependent enhancement in case you don't or not exposed to the vaccine or the virus that you were vaccinated for?
Right.
Was that looked at?
No, no one's talking about that. All right, let's play a little clip here. This is Dr. Richard Bartlett. This is a little clip from InfoWars, and he's an emergency room hospital director. I believe he's in the Denver area, and he's going to talk about this. And we'll stop this a couple times because he's not totally correct in what he's saying, but we want you to hear this is kind of getting to the initial stages of beating the panic drum again. All right? All right, here we go. Oh, hold on. It kicked me out, and I've got to re-cue it. There we go. All right, I think this is it. Let's find out.
Doctors and nurses have just been vaccinated with a live Ebola vaccine. Never before.
Okay. Let me back that up just a little bit. Play that again, and we're going to give Dr. Bartlett a little bit of assistance on this. He's not quite right.
Over $12 million now that's been reported to be of U.S. taxpayer dollars that's funneling to make this bat lab in the middle of the United States. You just presented a lot of evidence. If you look at all the different separate pieces, it makes a composite picture. Denver Health, paramedics, doctors, and nurses have just been vaccinated with a live Ebola vaccine. Never before have we had anyone in Denver, Colorado, or in Colorado at all vaccinated for Ebola. So this is history-making 2 months ago.
All right. Again, when you hear live Ebola vaccine, understand we've broken this down. Eric has explained it, what it is, and it's just one protein from one of the six kinds of Ebola being piggybacked in or carried in on a platform of a VSV virus, which is normally not a problem for us. So that's the actual direct delivery of this. So I would not call it a live Ebola vaccine. It's kind of it's almost a misnomer. It's incorrect in that extent. Anything to add?
No, I agree. It's not Ebola virus attenuated. No, it's a recombinant virus that's carrying one Ebola protein.
All right. Excellent. Here we go.
Why would they be doing that? They said they're doing it in preparation for a potential Ebola outbreak. Why would they be thinking that's possible? Well, there's a lab being created down the street from Denver in Colorado Springs where they're literally, it's advertising that they will be doing bat research, and it has been reported that they will be working with Ebola, Nipah virus, and COVID. And, you know, at this point, what I see in the emergency room with COVID is not the same thing that we had 3 years ago. It's not nearly as deadly. But when you have this kind of research going on with genetic engineering still happening with COVID, we don't know what could be released or leaked from a lab again. You know, we just had Boston.
If you believe this was some kind of a leak, an accidental leak, that's the suggestion. No. We feel this was 100% deployed, and the Japanese recently have demonstrated with a very fine paper that all the variants of the COVID-19 virus so far, just like the virus, are lab manufactured and released. Okay? So don't think about leak in the traditional sense of the term.
Right.
University and the CDC... in South Korea, both bragged that they had a COVID strain that has an 80% kill rate. That was a year ago. And
now the Chinese are bragging they did humanized mice with 100% death rate?
Right. So what is in those labs is not what we're dealing with right now in hospitals and emergency rooms. And I'm the medical director of a hospital emergency room. I work as an emergency room doctor. I am right now. And so I know what's happening boots on the ground, front line. But we don't know the worst yet that could happen with COVID if some of these things got out of a bioweapon lab.
And what you're saying?
Okay, I'll take that as an out right there. We don't know the worst yet about COVID. And I think that's a reasonable statement, a correct statement. We don't yet know. Think of that 2 to 5 year window after injection. Think of that. And now we are 4 years into this, 2020, 21, 22, 23, and now we're into 2024, which is actually the fifth year We've started the fifth year of this nightmare.
Yeah. You know, the other thing, too, and we mentioned this when we did the program on it before back in December, that you know, in injecting it, a large proportion of the population now is immune suppressed, either from having had these injections, certainly from having had these injections.
I'd say 80%, for sure.
Yeah, and the virus also does damage the immune system, at least transiently. And then to be jabbing them with a live virus vaccine, even if this virus is assumed to be benign, I think is folly. It's, and I think in their own papers, the CDC admits, their literature says that it's never been tested in immune-compromised people. So it's conceivable that because they are immune-suppressed, they're not going to be able to mount the proper immune response to this vaccination. And then what? This artificially synthesized virus begins replicating and spreading and does what? We don't know.
No, we don't.
I mean, we're assuming it's benign. You know, the vesicular stomatitis virus doesn't appear to be much of a problem in humans. It affects maybe the mucous membranes of the mouth, the roof of the mouth, and you might feel like you've got a flu for a couple days. But it's not known to be problematic. But that's, you know, in a relatively healthy population. What about an immune-suppressed population with a recombinant virus carrying an Ebola glycoprotein, fusion protein? We don't know.
No. The sad part of this is it is known, it is admitted, that this so-called Ebola vaccine is being shedding. Parts of it, don't know. It depends on the individual, but it is shedding.
Oh, yeah, it does shed, yes. So who are these people that back in the end of November at Denver Health, they mentioned that they gave this vaccine to some patients, and that's verbatim, some patients. Well, what was the rationale?
Yes, highly structured evaluations going on here. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's incredible. What, just to go out into the community and see what happens? See if it spreads, how it spreads.
Hey, you need $20? Come over here, friend.
It was probably something like that, yeah.
Roll up your sleeve. Here's a McDonald's $30 gift certificate. Won't hurt you. This is all crazy. Crazy. Okay,
well,
so
we're gonna
watch this, and the stage is set, and the actors are assembling, and they are injecting. So we'll see. And we've been told that Ebola will be the next pandemic. Don't know that that's true. We'll have to watch and see, but we will keep tabs on this for you as it continues to unfold. All right, the idea of getting this bioweapon COVID-19 virus is something that you want to take very seriously. You don't want to get this virus or any of its variants, which are all lab created and lab released. That's science. We're not surprised by any of this. But the idea of getting COVID twice is not good. Thrice is even worse. You don't want to get reinfected with this. If you've had it once, in many cases, it's bad news. In many cases, it's something you think you get over in a few days. But we know now that up to 2 years after infection the first time, they can still find viral activity or remnants in your body. So what's it doing after 2 years? It's still there.
Well, even the presence of just the proteins, the viral debris,
right?
It takes some effort for the body to clean that out. And the longer these viral proteins hang around, you know, they're inflammatory and they can provoke autoimmunity.
Autoimmunity, autoimmune diseases. Think of all these things. Inflammation, right? All right, so here's Dr. Philip McMillan. He's got a little piece out. It's called The Horrific Outcomes of COVID Reinfection. And also remember, how many stories have you seen where Mr. X or Mr. Y got COVID really badly, and yes, they've had three shots. So getting injected with this bioweapon so-called vaccine is almost guaranteeing you're going to get it. It's the lie is so transparent now.
Yep.
All right, here we go.
I'm Dr. Philip McMillan. Thank you very much for joining me as I try and take on a really, really important topic. I've picked this image here because I need it to be dramatic. My hope is that it will be so dramatic it causes people to really think about the seriousness of what I'm going to be talking about. So I'll be doing a few things. I'll be talking about a paper that was published in 2022 and looking at some of the outcomes. I'll be talking about some of the basic thoughts I have about immunity and mucosal immunity, and I'll be giving some ideas as to why I think that these patterns are occurring. Now, we have to be clear about something. There are all kinds of groups of people at the moment. Some people believe that the virus is not serious, and so it's just a cold. I think that's very dangerous, because the more we are learning about this virus and the origins of this virus, the more we're starting to realize that if this was developed, it's not going to have the normal characteristics of a virus. That's the most important point to reflect on. You have some people who are unvaccinated, who, as far as they're concerned, they are fine. I think that's a very dangerous perspective because of what I'll be showing you. You have another group of people who are vaccinated, and as far as they're concerned, if they're vaccinated, they're protected. That's clearly not going to be true. This is of relevance to every single cohort of individuals in a society. The only people who seem to be able to avoid this are probably in Africa, because there is no pandemic there, unless they've changed something recently. But this was always the point from in April 2022, where the pandemic was over after they had faced Omicron. We see now in highly vaccinated regions that this pandemic doesn't look as though it can be over. So let's get back to the reality of what I call the slow kill of COVID reinfection. And what I'm looking at here is a very important paper. And as I said, this paper was published in accepted in September 22, published online the 10th of November 2022. I have seen this paper, but for some reason I didn't actually look at it in detail. And it popped up in front of me recently, and I think that I really had to look at the relevance of it. This was from the USA, and they were looking at a cohort of people who had COVID infection and reinfection, and they compared them to a non-infected control. And this non-infected control here is about 5 million. So really a significant cohort of patients that they were looking at. They were looking at what they call the Veterans Affairs National Healthcare Database. And so this is a quite a broad cross-section of people in the US. And so will give us a good idea as to the relevance as to what it is that we are facing. And what they were finding there is that when they looked at the outcomes, when they spoke about different characteristics of that population, and this is just from the summary. And so when they looked at 6-month burdens of death, hospitalization, and sequela, and they found essentially that compared to no reinfection, so you just have one infection, reinfection contributed additional risks of death, 2.7 times, hospitalizations, 3.2 times, and then all other kinds of pulmonary, cardiovascular, hematological, diabetic, gastrointestinal, kidney, mental health, musculoskeletal, and neurological disorder. This is what they found primarily, and they said here the risks were most pronounced in the acute phase, but persisted in the post-acute phase up to 6 months, and technically beyond. They just measured it up to 6 months.
So many people get COVID, and they have a positive COVID test, and they get over it, they think, but 6 months later, still things going on. And when he says by a factor of two times or three times, that's 200, 300% higher.
Yeah. Right.
Now, this is extremely important. And it's relevant, as I said, to everybody. Because if you have a situation where the virus is continuing to circulate, and in one estimate I saw, certainly in the UK, they're talking about one in 13 people. This is, if you know 13 people on your way to work on the bus, you may have been in contact with a number of people, and everything is going to depend on how effective your mucosal immunity is. And before I go a little bit further, let me just highlight this important point about mucosal immunity. This is an image that I use all the time. In order for the virus to cause problems, so it's not just about infection, based on my research, if the virus cannot penetrate this mucosal barrier, which I have as this black line, which is with IgA antibodies, very sophisticated, about four levels of protection, if it doesn't get into the systemic system, into the lymph nodes, into the bloodstream, it is unlikely to cause significant problems. But if it penetrates this barrier...
And the barrier is at the back of the nasal pharyngeal part of your body. It's on the backside, in between your sinuses and your brain, your throat, your pharynx, etc. There's a barrier there. That's what he's talking about.
Doesn't matter what your vaccination status is, this is where the problem is, because what has happened is that if you've been infected before and it has penetrated this barrier, based on my research around autoimmunity, it has primed your immune system for a more severe response, almost what I call a low-grade cytokine storm. Not the same one that killed people with regards to the lung disease, but very similar in my research autoimmune response. So this is not to be ignored. So let's look at some of the outcomes that they had with regards to this. This here is again from the paper, and I find images tend to be better. When they looked, and this is across all of the cohorts, this is not just about vaccinated or unvaccinated. When they looked at all-cause mortality, that means that just any cause that people died. This black line here represents what you would call the point at which, if the bar is on here, there's no significant difference. You can see down at the bottom here, they have the numbers 1, 2, 3, hazard ratio. And you can see that in terms of all-cause mortality, it's all the way out here. For hospitalization, so this is not necessarily people dying, just them getting admitted into hospital within 6 months. It's all the way out here. And then look at all of the different cohorts of the organ systems. Cardiovascular and hematological coagulation are all the way out here. Diabetes has increased, but not as high. A lot of people would have fatigue, gastrointestinal symptoms. Kidney disease, goodness gracious, look how high this is after reinfection, and as well, lung responses.
Okay, I want to stop there because I think you get the point. Reinfection is almost a guarantee of vastly increased chances of major physiological breakdowns, illnesses, functional failure of your various organs and your organ systems, you name it. You don't want to get this twice. You don't want to get it once. Once you've gotten it, though, the door is open, so to speak, for far more significant problems. I think that's just a very succinct summation that may help. But he goes on from there. Dr. Philip McMillan, anything to add? Then we're going to jump over to our readers here.
Yeah, that is a pattern. The people that have experienced reinfection. The second time is worse, and the third time is even worse. You had a friend who mentioned that, didn't you?
I have no friends.
That he's had it twice, and he feels like
yes.
It did a number on his heart. And he
exactly.
said, if I get this a third time, I don't know if I'm going to make it.
Exactly right. And we've actually read stories like that where people have
yeah.
said that if they get another round
in fact,
of this.
I think I put one in the readers
okay.
we have.
All right. Yeah, correct. And I just don't even begin to know what to suggest to people. They don't know. They've been lied to. This whole thing has been one of the most outrageous hoodwinking operations I've ever seen pulled off on the mass of humanity. They've been conned, threatened, but most of all, they've been frightened into conformity, and I mean getting injected. And once you're injected, you're going to get this stuff, whether you're around people sick or not, it seems almost, you're going to get it. But those who are around, 1 out of 13 people right now, according to Dr. McMillan, has an active case going, and you can get it from them. So you laugh at masks all you want, but I'll take that little advantage, and I'll use my analogy again. If someone over there 20 feet away from you has an active case of tuberculosis, where would you rather stand, next to that person or 20 feet away? And wouldn't you like some kind of protection? Something? So,
yeah.
All right. It's not something you want to get. This is bad stuff. Bioweapon, virus, bioweapon, vax. Dangerous as hell. Maybe deadly as hell. We're seeing a lot of that, too. All right.
January 17, I think the one that kind of illustrates this is I've got it as post-COVID immune deficiency.
Go ahead. I'm not seeing it. I see brain disease, immune deficiency. Oh, there it is. They're all post-COVID, but post-COVID immune deficiency. Go ahead.
Yeah, there's three of them. Okay.
Got it. Yeah.
This woman says, I just tested positive for COVID again. This is actually my third go-around. First time in October 2020, I got the original COVID and have never been sicker in my whole life. It took over 3 months for me to get any sense of taste and smell back. Second time, May 2022, wasn't too bad, just more cold-like symptoms. This time, all sense of taste and smell is gone again, and I feel worse than the last time, but not nearly as bad as the first. I am so over COVID. 5-day isolation just as spring break has started. Perfect. Stay safe and healthy, people.
And she has photographs of her 3 positive tests for COVID there at the bottom of her statement.
Now,
right,
there were
the next...
a lot of... Yeah, just let me give some background
finish.
On this. A lot of people, this was around the time that the vax had been out. Some people in this group, because they were so desperate and they thought the vaccine would help them with their symptoms, ended up getting the vaccine. And then a small minority of them, for whatever reason, their symptoms did go away, but I would say a lot were made worse with the vaccine. So many people were telling her, get the vaccine. And she didn't. She held out, and she did not get it. So she adds a little bit more to her story here.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Thanks, everyone. I am a corrections officer, so I'm in close contact with 50 to 100 people for 12 to 16 hours a day, while also not being in the cleanest of environments and at times people. Because I am so close to my coworkers and inmates in an enclosed building with no air circulation, COVID can spread quickly. I tested for that reason and also because I never get sick. And the only times I have been sick in the past 3 years, I have been positive every time. I wish I could just get the common cold, flu, or allergies because I'd take that over COVID any day. But it never fails that every time I get sick, I test positive. It is so annoying. We have had our share of large outbreaks in our facility, but lately we've been zero or low for positives. I was just thinking, is COVID even a thing anymore? Why are we still having protocols and quarantines when hardly anyone gets it? Well, the joke's on me. And for those that asked, I am not vaccinated. But after the third time, I'm now starting to consider it. Because after getting it three times anyway, what's the harm now? I'm on day 2.5 from testing positive, and every single bit of taste and smell is 100% gone.
I, at this point, would obviously urge her to stay the course. She's working in an environment that is like being in a petri dish of COVID. That's terrible.
Yeah, and you know, an injection of poison is...
No, you don't want to do that. You don't want to do that. I think you all understand that already. All right, she has one more statement. She says...
This was actually from the admin of the COVID care group, who's actually quite knowledgeable on the topic.
Oh, the admin, comment. I see. Okay. He writes about the situation you've just heard. This is a rough situation. The reason you are so vulnerable to reinfection is that the virus has implanted in your B cells. On the flip side, your T-cell antibody memory for the virus remains in place too, so your body responds quickly. The problem with COVID and possibly other viruses is that every reinfection causes more damage, and COVID is neurotropic, meaning it affects the brain and its functions. If your health is starting to be affected, there are a few things you could do to make yourself stronger. I'll add an article about self-care that explains that and some other information to help you as well.
And yeah, that's what it is.
Yeah.
A helpful comment.
All right. Well, there you go. It's again, being in a closed environment with no air circulation, that is about the worst. When you go out, I was thinking about the average doctor's treatment room is about 10 by 10, right?
They're tiny.
They're tiny. And many have no windows, no outside air at all. And if the inside air conditioning is working, it's certainly just recirculating spike protein in every room. And if it's not on, those rooms are going to be a daily collection plate full of all kinds of things you do not want to be breathing or touching or be around. But nobody seems to think about that. There's no ozonator in a doctor's office, in a visit room or a treatment or evaluation. There should be in every one. And they have whole system ozone units. You can have your whole office.
You know where I did see one.
All of it done.
The veterinarians seem to be wise to that. Maybe it's because of, this illness that's going around with the dogs now, which is probably some version of this bioweapon. I mean, we know it can spread among dogs.
Right, right. Yeah, I agree. Okay, did we do brain disease last time? I don't think we did.
I think that's all we did.
Number 6 and 7? Up there.
Okay.
We did cognitive issues. We did autoimmune, and I don't think we got to brain disease.
All right.
So let's do that. All right, here. Go ahead with the first one here. This is awful. I remember you read this to me. January 17th. Number six down, brain disease. Post-COVID brain disease. Post-COVID brain disease.
I got it. Okay.
All right. Go ahead.
This was written back in October of this 2023. I have had long COVID since 2020. I was near death in 2022, literally on a vent in the ICU for 3 weeks. My family was approached about pulling the plug. The only reason I was and am still alive. My long COVID symptoms, memory issues, balance, blurred vision, tremors, fatigue, just a few, but those are the main ones. I finally got a brain MRI, and an ADEM was the most likely cause of these symptoms. Acute disseminated encephalomyelitis, lesions of white matter, also deep, on both sides of my brain. It seems to be consistent with my symptoms and was termed most likely the cause. The very day I was there, the hospital had already scanned a long COVID patient for the same reasons. Has anyone else had the same diagnosis?
All right. Here's a couple comments to that. Yes, it's very common. They found one lesion on my brain. We've been monitoring it yearly. It seems many long COVID patients, and remember, these are long vax patients, too, that are injured, have this, and all in the same area of our brains. There was an entire study done about that. Someone asks, can anything be done to help this condition? And the first person responds, I guess somebody responds, not that I'm aware of, just evidence that it has crossed the blood-brain barrier and monitor it. Someone says, I have a lesion also. The doctor can't say for sure if it's something that has always been there or if COVID caused it because I have nothing to compare. I've also been diagnosed with migraines recently, which can also cause the white matter lesions. I've always had migraines, sometimes in the past, but was diagnosed with it, not diagnosed with it until recently. From what I know, there's nothing can be done. You just have to monitor them and make sure they don't get worse. Another ad, same thing with me. How often do you get an MRI? And the other poster says, after the first one, it was 6 months. When there was no change, it's one a year now. All right, finish that up.
Another person says, yes, I have 5 lesions. I'm 3 years post-COVID. I have memory and word-finding problems, brain fog, and a lot of neurological issues. The post-exertional malaise drives me crazy. I see a neurologist. They don't know if the lesions are COVID or ischemia related to migraines. I get stroke symptoms from my migraines.
Wow. All right,
it's left its mark on a lot of people.
You get over COVID, post-COVID, but do you really clear it? Doesn't seem that that's the case. There are things left behind that are still causing trouble. And why the brain lesions, and why brain lesions in the same general location of the brain? Interesting questions. I don't know
that it always is. I think there may be some variability to that.
I'm sure there are, but these people happen to state it. Same place. It can be anywhere in your brain. Don't kid yourselves. Wherever the blood goes, this damage can follow.
Mm-hmm. Not
all
good.
Right. No. So there's a survey for you tonight of more information. I hope that was helpful. Do share these programs. Send them around. We're doing our best to watch and keep everybody up to speed on this growing nightmare. Thank you. Good job, as always. Talk soon.
Okay. Thank you, Jeff. Good night, everyone.
Be right back with Hour 3 in just a few minutes. Hold on.